You're like a man of, you're a cornucopia of business and faith. That's what I'm going to call you right now.
Okay. Something like that. Yeah.
Sure.
And
sure.
Now it's, we could dump it all out or we could pull out fruits and veggies and nuts one at a time. What do you put in a cornucopia?
I think you nailed it. Yeah.
You hit it with a stick and fruit goes flying.
It's not a pinata. It is not a Native North American pinata. No, that is not.
Don't think for what Native American. Is that what?
Isn't that, yeah, I think yeah. It comes from, yeah.
Oh.
Like from the original Thanksgiving.
Indigenous.
Yeah. Wow, I did not realize that.
I mean,
that.
We always colored them in grade school around Thanksgiving, yeah. So yeah.
Fair. Okay, I thought it was just because it was fall colors. So... Oh, yeah, Beatitudes. Welcome to an amazing Monday kickoff episode for another great week of the Beatitudes. This is not just a show. It's a movement and a moment for Christian men growing through fraternity on their way to eternity. And the Trinity's involved. There's lots of really amazing things happening there.
Lots of entities.
That's it.
Speaking of amazing entities, I'm Jeff Schaffelbein, and I'm pleasure to be here. that's a greeting card. Yeah,
that's easy for you to say.
That's easy for you to say.
Joined by my incredible co-host, none other than Paul Kolker.
Well, howdy.
Paul, every time I look at you, I think you have such a beautiful heritage.
I see what you did there.
Wow. The hair stuff.
Thank you. Yes. That really gelled right there. Yeah.
Well, and I see amazing brows across the way from me with Nick Besner.
I'm glad he didn't brow out on that one.
My brow, bro. Hey, this is going to be an action-packed show because we're doing one monster show with our guest, Jim Keyes. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Good to be here.
Have you ever gone by James?
No, actually.
Jimothy?
It looks better. It's balanced, though, on my body.
Yeah, James W. Keyes.
Yes.
Does anybody ever say Keyes?
It's Reyes. Oh, Keyes.
Keyes.
Yeah, in Mexico, it's Keyes.
In Texas, yeah. You get your Jim Keyes.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
You were just talking before the show. Jimmy. You were talking about... I'm not going to call you Jimmy. I don't know you that well. Easy now. I do call the bishop my man.
My man.
When Bishop Burns was on the show, you know, I ran into you a couple weeks ago, and you talked about how Bishop was excited to share the show. Well, I tried to capitalize on this a week ago, and I want to tell you about this. Bishop was sitting at the table with Tim Tebow at the Catholic Pro-Life Community event. Paul and I were both there. We both had a role to play. And I'm like, Paul, I'm going to go tell Bishop to tell Tim Tebow all about the Beatitudes. And Paul goes, ha, 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 you're serious.
He's like, he's going to actually do this. Yeah.
So I stood up. I walked over there. I knelt down between Bishop Burns and Tebow. And I said, Bishop. Did you tell Tim yet about when you were on the Beatitudes? And he goes, Tim, hey, I got to tell you this. And like a boss, I just got up and walked off.
Amazing. Amazing.
So when is he on?
We've been trying, Jim. Yeah. I feel like you might have more pull than the bishop.
Let's get him here.
I need you to play this out. We actually made a request for a 6-minute episode and got denied.
Really?
To those watching, though, please don't clip out the part where Jeff says, you may have more pull than the bishop. Just get that out of context.
Thank you. Yes. With Tim Tebow. I don't know. Hey, I also delivered Paul's Catholic dad joke on stage at that event. Jim, were you at the CPLC dinner?
I was. No.
Okay, so here's the joke. And I cleared it with the writer of the joke beforehand, Mr. Paul Kolker.
Happy to be your writer.
I got up there and I said, when Tim Tebow was playing football, how were we assured that he had been anointed by the Holy Spirit? He always wore a paracletes. Now, you have to be not just Catholic, but Catholic enough to know that the Holy Spirit's the paraclete. So yeah. There was over 1,000 people in this room, and I can tell you how many of them by the laughters and the uhs.
There were like seven laughters.
Yes.
And one of them was not Tim Tebow, who got up and told me to stop telling jokes. Remember at the beginning, he goes, this is a great event, Jeff. Maybe just stick to emceeing and don't tell any jokes.
Maybe why he turned you down.
There you go. We lost him on that one.
Jim, you're like a cornucopia of business and faith. That's what I'm going to call you right now.
Okay, business. Something like that. Yeah.
Sure.
And now it's we could dump it all out, or we could pull out fruits and veggies and nuts one at a time. What do you put in a cornucopia?
I think you nailed it. Yeah.
You hit it with a stick and fruit goes flying.
It's not a pinata.
It is not a native North American pinata. No, that is not.
Don't think for what Native American. Is that what?
Isn't that, yeah, I think it comes from,
Oh.
Like from the original Thanksgiving.
Right. Indigenous.
Yeah. Wow, I did not realize that.
We always colored them in grade school around Thanksgiving, so
Fair. Okay, I thought it was just because it was fall colors. So if we started this, you could start a whole brand, and I guarantee it would sell. Like, knock open this cornucopia and get fruit and veggies and nuts.
Hmm.
It has an expiration date. Jim, you've done a lot of really great stuff in your life.
You wondered why I was scared.
Yeah. Are you regretting your decision?
I'm still looking for the stick.
The gong. Get him out of here. I first got to know about you through our mutual friend, Daniel Hennessy. And he was just sharing that you had this incredible background. Before we get into that, though, you've just released a book. Is this book number one, or you're like an author?
Book number one. I am an author now. Best-selling author. It's actually been getting some good numbers.
Yeah, nice.
Awesome. I bought one.
Well, thank you.
Plus one.
Come on, guys.
We're business partners. We just share it.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
I've been reading it also.
We read together.
It's a book that's meant to be given, so that's the purpose. So you're right on target.
There you go. There you go. I actually think it's – so the title of the book is Education is Freedom. Tell us about this book. What's the genesis of it? And, what's going on with this? What's the push to write this book?
It is. It's a really modest objective. I'd like to – bring peace to the world.
Love it.
We've all got a lot in common. Modesty.
Yeah. I'm actually serious.
I know you are.
No, that's incredible.
That's the scary part. That's
you know, if you don't aim big enough.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. No, the original objective of the book was to help young people, because I was one of those kids that was not supposed to go to school, grew up very poor, challenging environment, et cetera, et cetera. And my path to privilege, if you will, I've had an amazing life that has been really dictated by two things, my education and my faith. And those two things have been really the secret to success in virtually everything that I've done through my whole life.
How'd you grow up? Tell us about the childhood.
It was a little challenging. It was a three-room house. I have to be careful when I tell the story because people think, well, what do you think, you're Abraham Lincoln or something? Seriously, no running water, pump outside.
Yeah.
Three-room, not three-bedroom. We had six kids. I slept on my bedroom was the pull-out couch with Mom and Dad. Because my siblings were all jammed into bunk beds in the one little bedroom that we had. And we had an outhouse. And if you haven't grown up in Massachusetts with snow 3 feet deep and you need to use the outhouse in the middle of the night, it's not a great experience. It was quite a challenge.
People's jaws have to hit the ground when you say this. I mean, we haven't even teased this out. You're the former CEO of 7-Eleven, former CEO of Blockbuster. You've written this book. You're traveling all over the world. You've got stuff going on at the Vatican we're going to cover. And you grew up tranching through the snow in a place that I've never heard of, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
To an outhouse.
At least you can say it. Most people in the South, people say Massachusetts. They just like, they can't get it out.
Come on.
It's
like,
wow.
I mean, I understand, like, there's probably this part that's like, you don't want to, like, shed too much light on that, but tell us about how that leads to this maybe understanding of education.
Well, I am happy to shed light on it because it truly was an awakening that happened much later in life that it doesn't matter what circumstances you grow up in. We live in America. We're blessed here. I have had a blessed life throughout, and yet you look at the circumstances. Growing up in that house, my mom had about enough of it by the time we were five, and she ended up leaving us and went upscale to the trailer park, met another guy. You know, he had a fancy trailer and a trailer park, and that was a much better life. And so you look at these these consequences of all these things that happen to a little kid, 5, 6, 7 years old, and you think, oh, this, what a terrible tragedy. But here's the blessing inside of all this, and this is where the learnings come from, that inside of this awful situation, I had the privilege that most children don't have of 6 amazing years with my dad. Because what I didn't know at the time is that he would pass by the time I was 12. Mm. And so some kids grow up and they don't even know their dad very much. They're working, they're doing this, they're doing that. Well, my dad was a hardworking guy, but I had exclusive one-on-one time with him to go fishing, to go camping. He was my best friend. And then, of course, he passed. But then when he passed, I had the next set of years exclusively with my mom. And so I got to know them individually. And while you look back at that, you say, well, what a catastrophic, you know, childhood that had to be. It really wasn't. In many, many ways, it was a blessing growing up the way I did. And it also gave me a fierce sense of independence that said, no one's here to catch me when I fall. I don't have a safety net. No. I don't have mom to run to when I fall off my bike. So I better take care of myself. And education became that path to be able to take care of myself under any circumstances that may happen.
And how'd you know that it was education? Was it something from your mom or dad, or did you kind of find that path on your own?
I didn't, of course, I didn't know. My mom and dad both used to say, whatever it is, we can't help you. They're both hardworking factory workers. But they would say, somehow, some way, the more you know, the more you can do. And no one can take that away from you, by the way. And it sounded very fatalistic when my dad used to say, you know, they can take your money, they can take your things, they can, but they can't take what you know. So learn as much as you can.
And I'm going to add in they can't take your joy, because if I'm listening to this story from Jim Keys, like, I imagine you're floating around in the world today hanging out with people and they complain because their DoorDash order was messed up or their Wi-Fi is slow and you're like, son?
You're at an outhouse?
I'm still smiling. And what you just said was full of blessings that they are blessings.
They
but
are.
You have a very unique way of being able to also not just say it but express it as a place of joy. I've never seen you when you're not smiling. We one time sat at the same table together, but it was one of those events where it was way bigger than this little tiny table. And we couldn't talk. And I was like, this was my chance to get to know Jim. Didn't happen. So I was like, I'll start a podcast. We'll go for a year. Then I'll get Jim on here. And I'll get to have some hangout time 2 people away from him.
We're closing the we're closing the whole thing down after this interview. This was all an elaborate
Our mission.
Plot. Yeah.
From day one.
Yep. Crescendo denouement.
You know, I've got a great story, though, for you, Jeff, because I you're right. And to be able to take that circumstance and see it as a blessing is a blessing in itself, to be able to live like that, that I've learned from the time I was a child that adversity can really be a strength. I just had a chance to teach, to speak to the students of South Oak Cliff High. Challenging school, right? A lot of those kids live in poverty. I was able to stand up there and tell them my story and to say, guys, as tough as this may be, you live in a world that you can do anything you want to do. And this adversity, if you recognize it this way, is actually your superpower.
Yeah.
It's a strength. If you find the silver lining in it, if you look, if you have the strength to power through, you'll look back on this time of your life as a period of advantage that you have over other kids who didn't have to face those challenges.
With the book, amen to that. With the book, Education is Freedom, do you run into people who, this kind of flies in the face of some of the rhetoric right now of you don't need an education, all you need is YouTube, just teach yourself, be a hacker. Like, is this countercultural?
It is. I've found myself in a position that I'm the sort of counterpoint to this narrative that school's not relevant anymore.
He's a voice in the desert eating locusts.
Yeah, exactly. Crunching on them. And I'm spitting them out because seriously, it's such an important counterpoint to have because this is a trap. So many people are caught up in this negative narrative about all the bad things that are going on in our schools and, you know, it all is fear-based. Mm. If you cut through all of the narrative and the politics and the rhetoric, someone's afraid that their children are going to be indoctrinated, harmed, influenced, et cetera, et cetera. And meanwhile, they're there to learn. But you can't take them out of that environment and deprive them of the ability to learn. So it's a terrible conundrum. There is an answer to it. I've been out there preaching the importance of education, learning, however you get it, but also the importance of that formalized process, because many of us need the discipline. We can supplement that formalized process if it's inadequate with technology, with other things, but it's so critically important today for society.
I love it. Can you tell us, and I don't know this part of your story, your formal education, but then what were the other, kind of the add-on to that, what were the other things that you would say were very formative in your education that might not be an institution? But where did you get your schooling?
Well, I had the blessing of attending the College of the Holy Cross. So I had a good Jesuit education at college. That was my first exposure to a Catholic education. I went to public school, of course, as a kid. We couldn't afford private school. And didn't even think I could go to school. I mean, literally, and one last little piece of the story growing up, literally walking home from public school one day and find a red sign tacked on the door of this little shack that we were living in, and it said condemned. I didn't know what the word meant. So to be able to go from that to the College of the Holy Cross was an incredible blessing. And again, you talked about, Jeff, you talked about all of the narrative today. School's too expensive. Who can afford it? Well, I couldn't afford College of the Holy Cross. It was $10,000 a year for room, board, and tuition. But I worked. And I worked at McDonald's, and I drove a truck. I did everything I could do. I even, instead of living on campus, I just paid for tuition and lived at home so that I could commute. And that way I'd get the most value for the dollar without spending the money on tuition, because I certainly couldn't afford that. But
who did you live with after both parents passed?
Well, my mom lived until a little bit later. She lived until I was late 20s.
Oh, okay.
And so,
got it. So
I lived with her through high school.
Got it.
She moved. She went upstairs.
Oh, yeah. She moved.
Right.
Then your dad passed. Got it.
Right.
I'm on
so she was in the trailer park.
Yep.
Yeah. She tried to spare me the trailer park, which wasn't so great, because she kind of moved in with her friend who hated my existence. And you'll read about that interesting little dilemma that I had in the book. But bottom line, all of those things gave me the strength to do what I had to do, and I ended up at College of the Holy Cross. The one thing that my mom did bring with her was her faith. So my dad was Baptist. I learned his faith with First Baptist Church of Grafton, Massachusetts. A little choir boy, actually sang in the choir. And my mom, being Catholic, I started going to Mass with her and converted when I was like 12 years old. So it was a huge blessing.
My goodness.
Wow. So the tagline could be from condemned to redeemed.
There you go.
Love that.
I thought you were going to try to make a rhyme to redeemed.
Oh, no. No, I just, I love, you know,
yeah.
It's crazy.
Still working
on that.
It's
a wild story.
Part of the
story.
Still working on that redemption thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think
we all
are.
Way to go, yeah.
We all are, yeah. No, but
in process.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Loading.
You weren't
loading.
Listening at confession last week, were you?
What? No. But we have some playback for that right now. No.
Okay, so, do you still sing?
Oh, gosh, no.
Come on.
No.
Jim. You were a choir boy. Once a choir boy.
Yeah, and my voice changed, I think. Not for the better.
Do you play musical instruments?
I do. I played the organ for church. I was a church organist as a kid.
I'm going to keep asking until I get to this. Like, are you some sort of an expert pianist or something?
No, I'm horrible. What I've discovered is I write my own music, and that way no one knows if it's good.
Yeah.
Right? And if you play and you make a mistake, no. That
was a minor
how
chord.
I wrote
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
how
yeah
I wrote
that's
it.
How I wrote
yeah.
it.
I wanted you to feel that discord.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
that's good.
Yeah. And then you do that Jim smile and tell them it's a blessing for you to listen to this.
Yeah, exactly. And they buy it. It's amazing.
It's awesome.
Okay, man, we're going to keep just driving into this. So Holy Cross, what happens in your career after finishing college?
Holy Cross, at Holy Cross, I had no idea what was an option. Business wasn't even on my radar screen. It was like the factory my dad worked at. I wanted nothing to do with that. And I had a so I was going to go to law school. I had a professor, Father Lapamata, he was a good Jesuit priest. He intercepted me on my way to law school, literally. He said, "Where are you going to go to school?" And I told him I'd gotten into Villanova and a couple of other law schools. And he said, "No, no, no. He said, you're going to make a terrible lawyer. I've had you for 2 years in class. You'll be a horrible lawyer. Don't, please don't go to law school." And he said, "If you're going to go to law school, at least get this thing called a JD MBA. And one of the first schools that offered the combined degree was Columbia. And he introduced me to Columbia, and I said, "There's no way. Are you kidding me? It's an Ivy League school. I can't afford that. There's no way." And he, with his encouragement, I applied, and sure enough, I got in, and the rest was kind of history. Somehow, some way, I managed to, again, save up money, work really hard, and get into Columbia, and never finished the JD MBA. I ended up with an internship in the oil industry for Gulf Oil during a summer after the first year there, and they said, "Go back, finish the MBA, forget about law school, come to work for us," which I did. Launched a career.
All right. Wow. What brought you to Texas?
Well, the oil industry, my first, that internship was actually in Houston. Mm. So I, you know, here I am, a little small town kid from Massachusetts, right? I come to Houston, Texas, where, and this is, gosh, in the 1980 time frame, and it was, I mean, it was just a blast. Houston was, it was dynamic. Everybody was young. Everybody was from somewhere else. And it was really a great place to be. So, yeah, that's how I got to Texas the first time. And then ultimately, I went back to Gulf full time. They sent me to Pittsburgh instead of Texas. And I have to say nice things about Pittsburgh because that's where our bishop is from.
You better, yeah. You need to.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, he's Iron City guy. So I actually loved Pittsburgh, but then ended up with an opportunity to come back to Texas via the Southland Corporation. They had acquired a company called Citgo Petroleum, which was their source now of gasoline for their 7-Eleven stores. And that was my entry to the Southland Corporation in 7-Eleven here in Dallas.
Yeah, most people don't remember that Southland was, is that the original name of 7-Eleven or the original parent?
Yeah, it was literally called the Southland Ice Company. Yeah, yeah, down in Oak Cliff on 12th Street. They had an ice dock. Yeah.
Well, and that was all they sold, right, at
first? That was it. That was it. Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, they sold ice docks?
Just ice.
Limited market, yeah. Very small market.
Very small.
But they had a big market share.
Sorry, I digress.
Yes. But yeah, but it started as just ice.
It did. It did. In fact, I tell the story in the book because it's a fascinating story about change, which is a big theme of the book, the importance of embracing change. And when 7-Eleven had some troubles, the reason for telling the story about my childhood is I learned about troubles, right? So here I am at 7-Eleven. I thought, man, my career's taken off. And they filed for bankruptcy. By 1991, the company did an LBO, a leveraged buyout, and took itself private in 87 during the market crash, the October Black Monday market crisis. And so here by 1991, they were bankrupt. I went to the chairman of the company, John Thompson, who was kind of my mentor at the time, and he told me the story about how they started in Oak Cliff. And he said, "We used to sell 50-pound blocks of ice for people to put in their ice box. There were no refrigerators. In Dallas, Texas, what do? They would mine the ice, literally, in the Great Lakes, ship it down the Mississippi, wagon it over here, and bury it 100 feet underground, and then haul it out and sell it in blocks to people for their ice box." I mean, it's just... hard to even imagine how that was possible, right?
I bought a refrigerator for $100.
Yeah, I know. It's incredible. But so he tells me the story, and he said, and this is 1927 when his father started the company.
Wow.
1928, somebody invents something called a Frigidaire. What's that do to your business model? And his message was, if we didn't change, we would have been out of business by 1929.
Sure.
But he said his uncle got on the dock, started talking to customers, and the customers told him, "We don't come here for the ice. We come here for the convenience. Where else are we going to get ice? Sell other things we need conveniently."
Wow.
And 7-Eleven was born.
The convenience store.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that a cool story?
That's wild. Because we just take that for granted today, but like it had to develop.
It had to develop. And it came from crisis. It came from adversity. It came from being challenged. They could have gone away. They could have had their head down, given up.
Yeah, but for somebody who's been in an adverse situation, you're not afraid of it. You are aware of how that works, and you know how to endure it. Yeah.
Totally related to that story. Wow. You know what else they were? Men of faith.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know the Thompson family, but Joe C. Thompson was the founder of the company back in 1927. His sons, John, Jerry, and Jody, are all three strong, strong men of faith, strong Catholics. And that was evident in the way they led the business. We were regularly seeing their faith have an influence on the Southland Corporation as leaders.
The team at Aquinas Wealth Advisors believes that good values and good returns are not mutually exclusive. Using a tech-smart and morally sound approach, they provide investment alternatives that align with Catholic teachings without sacrificing returns. These days, faith-driven investors are finding it hard to know where their money is going. They have no visibility into what their dollars are supporting, but there's a better way. Thanks to the Faith and Finance Score from Aquinas Wealth Advisors, you can look into your current holdings to see what you're supporting and make a switch to an advisor that aligns with your values and gives power to your voice. Check out AquinasWealth.com today.
Hey, Beatitudes, it's Jeff here. When Nick and I set out and we started this company, Undivided Life, we decided to not use traditional healthcare, but we went with Solidarity Healthshare because we thought it was an affordable and ethical alternative that matched the needs of our business and our growing families. Since then, my family put Solidarity to the test. We've had pregnancies, babies, emergency room visits, even a brain surgery for one of my children, and Solidarity has been an incredible partner and has also had the cost and the ethical approach that we love. Here's a link for you to go check it out. learnmore.solidarityhealthshare.org/beatitudes. This is your chance to be in solidarity with the Schoeffelbein family.
Hi, it's Paul Kolker from the Beatitudes here, and I just wanted to share with you guys that I also, outside of the show, perform improv comedy on a regular basis with a group called Divine Comedy. So what we do is we come up with everything on the spot, so whether you're looking for faith-filled, fun, family-friendly comedy for your youth night, or whether you're looking for clean comedy for your corporate event, Divine Comedy can perform for your group and even get you in on the action. So if you'd like to hire us to come out and perform for your next event, check out DivineComedyImprov.com. Divine Comedy, an inferno of fun.
Stop what you're doing and listen to the Beatitudes.
Okay, so in this arc of your story, between the stuff with your folks and then school, was faith always present for you? Was it growing? Was it like, what is that like as you're becoming a young man in the business world with your JD MBA?
Drop the JD.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, drop the JD.
With your MBA internship.
Yeah, bag that part. Yeah.
Where was faith for you?
He was right. I would have been a terrible lawyer. No, faith was there from the beginning. And I was really blessed to have both parents have strong faith. I witnessed my dad and his, in spite of his challenges, his strong faith. I was then with my mom able to be introduced to the Catholic faith. And so in a way, I thought I had the best of both worlds because I saw two very different perspectives all coming together, you know, under the same God and the same faith, really. And it helped me so much as a child to realize that our differences are irrelevant. What we have in common is so much more important than all of the differences everybody gets hung up on. So yeah, that was my first introduction to it. And of course, it helped as I dealt with all of those challenges as a child. I don't think I could have made it through but for that one consistency of never feeling alone.
I made it through. You rose up the ranks of the 7-Eleven group, right?
I did.
Where'd you start and where'd you finish?
Let's see. Well, starting at when they brought me into 7-Eleven, I was head of strategic planning for this new oil company they had bought called Citgo Petroleum. So I did that We were successful, turned around the company, took it from losing money to making a lot of money, and then they sold that division to PDVSA, the government oil company of Venezuela. Kept a supply contract for the stores, and then the Thompsons actually called me down to Dallas and asked me to stay with the parent company to lead their retail gasoline business. I was a child. I was like 25 years old or something. I can't believe they entrusted me with a $2 billion piece of the business.
Yeah.
But they did.
Like you said, you had to grow up quickly, though, right? Like
yeah.
As a kid, so yeah.
Very, yeah. I looked like I was 47, I think. I had a little mustache.
And then how long were you with that organization?
Well, I was with 7-Eleven, the Southland Corporation, for 21 years in total. That role led to leading the gasoline business, led to during the leverage buyout and the financial challenges that 7-Eleven had, the gasoline division performed quite well. So we did exceptionally well on the earnings side. And when we had to file, of course, the opportunity then came to do something else. And there was a really important lesson here, because during crisis, what do you think people do? They're scared.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. They have the head down. I talk about in the book the portion of our brain that goes all the way back to being cavemen. It's fight or flight.
Fight or flight, yeah.
Yeah. And you see it in the boardroom.
Easy to walk away.
Every day you see it in the boardroom,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
And it comes out today, even though we don't have a natural predator. That's why it was there, to keep us alive when a tiger was chasing us, right?
Yep.
You want to run away, or you want to be able to fight to the death to be able to survive. Well, that same set of behaviors, that same brain mechanism that triggers survival, kicks in the boardroom when someone is perceived to threaten you or upset you or whatever. We do it in our personal life. We do it in our corporate life. And so the antidote to that is knowledge, to be able to understand the circumstances and to be able to power through it. That's the advantage that I have, having had all of these different periods of crisis, that somehow I've been able to understand that difference between this is truly going to hurt me or I'll be able to make it through.
Well, the book, I mean, you're nailing the title of the book here, right?
It's exactly.
That knowledge is a place of freedom, because now you're free from this this animalistic side of who we had to be as cavemen. That we don't have to be. You neither need to fight or flight in a moment of just business struggles.
Exactly, exactly.
It's just the next thing.
Exactly. And the antidote to it is knowledge. And the more knowledge you can build, the less you have to be afraid of. We were talking about Yoda earlier.
Yeah, right before the show.
We were.
That's how we warm up.
Yeah, exactly. We were telling Yoda jokes, but Yoda, actually, it was an ancient philosopher that said this first, but Yoda used it in Star Wars, which is that fear or ignorance leads to fear, and fear leads to anger, and anger leads to violence, and it's a negative cycle.
Yeah.
And we see so often people get in that negative cycle. So what happens when you're afraid as a kid?
You react, lash out, or
wet your pants,
change your shorts. Yeah, I was gonna say
change your shorts.
No, I meant something more wholesome. Like you cry for mom,
sure,
and she comes in. That's bad. and she turns on the light, and when the light comes on, what happens? Fear goes away.
You can see.
Yeah, there's no boogeyman. Yeah. I don't have anything to be afraid of. Right? That's knowledge. But you know what else it is? Faith.
Yeah.
A light shines in the darkness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a similarity there between knowledge and faith, because both represent the light that takes away fear. And when you take away fear, you can do anything.
Well, and I think Pope Benedict emphasized that faith is a way of knowing, so that it's one of the ways that we can know things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Do you know, when we had J.J. Sanford on here, the president of the University of Dallas, he talks about this, right? You started with ignorance, so did Yoda. Ignorance, and it leads to this cycle that gets you to violence.
Yes.
And he wrote this paper about why have we lost the art of arguing without quarreling? But arguments are a well-formed debate. You can argue your side. You can hear the other side. Quarreling is most of what we see on social media that's starting to spill over into our real lives. But I think it comes from a place of ignorance and not knowing.
It's exactly right. And JJ, I love JJ. I quoted him in the book because,
oh, cool.
Yeah, I have huge respect for him. And basically, he's right. It is this negative cycle that you get into that comes from a place of ignorance, and it stops critical thinking. Mm. An entire chapter in the book is the importance of critical thinking. Yeah. JJ teaches that, and he emphasizes the importance of it, because that questioning, that back and forth, that seeking of knowledge, seeking the light, is what takes away the fear, and it eliminates that need for argument.
Jim, I want to go on record and just say that if anybody's listening to this, the University of Dallas is an incredible place to put children to, or young adults, so that they can learn how to think and how to think critically and go through this core set of courses in that Catholic liberal arts. And if they're looking to sponsor a podcast, this would be an excellent one. So I just thought I would put that out there.
He has to now. We've just given him an advertisement.
I know.
Right?
I'm just being helpful preemptively, and the bill will show up later.
I'll carry it over there. It's right down the street.
Yeah.
Vatican Valley.
Yep. I've got a somewhat more serious question.
I'll be the judge of that.
Talking through some of the adversity that you've overcome, seeing it with, I'm sure, employees' challenges in your own career and businesses, like, as a parent, one of the things that I always think about is, yes, on the one side, we want the best life that we can give to our children. On the other side, they don't have those same challenges. Like, how do you balance those two things, and what have you done? I don't know if you have kids, but how have you
force them to go sleep in the snow?
Yeah, exactly.
There's your latrine.
You only use the outhouse.
Yeah. It's a good thing I don't have kids, because I'd make them use the outhouse.
Yeah. Just curious if you have any thoughts on that.
Preston Trail, there'd be an outhouse back there. No. The golf course may not like
there
it.
There you go.
It's for the kids.
Yeah, it's for the kids. Just get over it.
And hole seven.
Some fake snow.
And hole seven.
Yeah.
Give me both. Hole, yeah. Not the hole.
Yeah.
You don't hit
yeah.
it into the latrine.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
No,
serious question.
The serious answer to the serious question is that is a problem. I have so many friends that are so blessed with their life, and they've made money and they're successful, and they naturally want to give their children everything they possibly can. I would want to too, but what I'm trying to do, part of the objective of the book, is you don't have to suffer that adversity. It can be an advantage if you take it right, but I'd like to spare others that the reality of having to experience those things, and still give them the set of tools that are necessary, whatever your adversity is, because everybody has some level of adversity, right?
For sure.
Mine just happened to be a little more severe. So if they can just turn the same tools that I was able to use into maybe someone bullied them at school or something, they can still use these tools to get past that and see that bad situation as a learning experience and an opportunity.
Yeah, it's good.
We're about to talk about Blockbuster, but I want to point out one thing first, which is our previous guest before you, the week before, is Steve Picorni, and he's from Freedom Coaching.
Yeah.
Your book is Education is Freedom. And this really cool theme comes out that I think people from the outside looking in, or that aren't well-formed in our faith, perceive religion, Catholicism, the magisterium, as a stripping away of freedom, that it's control.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they miss the point that it is the pathway to freedom is when you have this faith, because then you are able to be in full integrity with who God called you to be, running towards things that are of a higher virtue, in service of others. I mean, you can kind of keep going down this list of what freedom is. Freedom isn't doing whatever you want. It's, how would you describe it, Paul?
Well, it's freedom for good.
Thank you.
Right? Because so much of what we talked about, you know, some of the fight or flight and all that, it's like, well, we also have concupiscence, right? Where there's this tendency to want to pursue the lower things, right? So it's easier to be slothful than it is to be athletic, right? Or it's easier to eat more than to maybe eat less. And it's just like all of those kinds of things, we can slip that direction. So freedom is the discipline, or it's the result of the discipline that keeps us from going down that road.
It's that freedom to choose to say no, right?
Yeah, because otherwise we get stuck in these, we get
you're
enslaved
not a slave to it,
to
exactly.
these habits, yeah.
Fight or flight or freedom. Your third choice is freedom.
Yeah, I love it.
I think we're onto something. And that's one of the things that when you hit our cornucopia, we're going to have sayings in there like a fortune cookie. And what was the word you just used? Cornucopians? Was it, you just said cork.
Concupiscence.
That's actually the brand. Cornucopians. Cornucopias. Full of wisdom. I swear we can make a lot of people happy with this.
This could work.
Yep.
It could not. but it could.
Yeah, yeah. There's a non-zero percent chance that this could work. Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to be CEO of that.
This is just a test market. I accept your wisdom. Stick around. We got a lot more. Some of them are awesome.
You know what else freedom is, though? To take it back to a serious note for a second.
Yeah.
Freedom is the Beatitudes.
It really is.
Yeah, the real ones. And the dudes too. But think about it. One thing that I see in the Catholic Church now that terrifies me is the division within the church, within our own people. Amen. And you know what's causing it? Fear.
Amen.
I see it. We talked about the schools. They're going to indoctrinate my kids. I've stood up. I do a lot of Legatus talks. I was in Denver. Oh, no, I was in Naples, Legatus of Naples. And someone stood up right after my talk about the importance of education and how, you know, the formal education structure, the liberal arts, really you need breadth of knowledge during the information age, not depth as much, because you can replace that with technology. And I go off on this whole thing, and a gentleman stood up and said, you know, my friend's kids went to Harvard, and they were good Catholics when they went in, and they came out, they were atheists.
All people in Harvard are being indoctrinated.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the air got sucked out of the room. And how do you respond to that, right? That was a really tough. Here I am.
How do you respond to that?
Well, you know what I said, and it worked, but I truly believe this. I said, look, if your faith is strong enough, you have nothing to fear.
Mm-hmm.
And is that fear that's speaking, or is it reality? Because that fear is what's making people afraid that their own children will be influenced or swayed. Your faith is what drove those children, what trained those children. They learned from you, like I learned from my dad and my mom. Nobody was going to influence me. No one was going to indoctrinate me. They may teach me to think. They may show me both sides of an argument. But at the end of the day, my faith would prevail.
Yeah, and it might just be, in certain cases, you know, a discernment process of which school is best for which kid as
Correct.
Well. So, it doesn't mean that everybody needs the same exact setup.
I mean, some people go to the outhouse and come out atheists.
Sure.
I'm just saying it could happen anywhere.
It could happen.
Hey, so 7-Eleven was the next stop. So you were CEO of 7-Eleven. When did that come to an end? I don't even know this part of your story.
We sold the company in 2005 to our largest licensee, 7-Eleven Japan.
Okay.
And they've done a fabulous job ever since. They've taken it now to 80,000 stores worldwide. And
7-Eleven is like a phenomenon in Japan, right?
It's amazing, yeah. All over the world, really. But especially the Asian stores have really cracked the code on using technology to have just-in-time delivery and have super high-quality product. They have restaurant-quality sushi in 7-Elevens in Japan. Restaurant quality.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is. Wow. Truly is.
You know, you're our second 7-Eleven executive to come through here. We had David Coletti on here. He runs mergers and acquisitions now.
Yeah.
He's actually doing a lot of upping those numbers. Yeah. But I think y'all are the first two people we've ever had from the same lineage of company backgrounds.
Yeah.
Okay, so you sell it, then you retired and did nothing else, right?
Yeah. No, I was relatively young, and after 21 years, I was ready to try something new, and I thought I would take the learnings that I had, because it was amazing learnings throughout that whole period of time, through crisis, through good times, and I wanted to apply it somewhere else. And I looked at two companies, actually, Radio Shack and Blockbuster.
Wow.
Were both companies that had kind of lost their way and needed to be transformed. And I was confident that in both cases, there was a technology solution that could help both companies succeed.
And you chose Blockbuster.
Well, I didn't actually choose, but Blockbuster actually chose me. I was on a roadshow. I had two decks in my briefcase talking to private equity firms because I wanted to partner with a private equity firm and take one of those two companies private. And I know this sounds crazy, but the big vision was to buy one, get it turned around, and then buy the second, bang them together. Hmm. And here was the vision. The Apple Store had just been presented. So here was a concept, and from as an old retailer, I admired it. No inventory. But what they had was the ability to satisfy your needs and train you, demonstrate the product in the store. So the combination of product, hardware, and software, and the Genius Bar that helped you put it
solve
together.
Solve your problem.
Yeah. So Radio Shack had hardware. Blockbuster had software, the number one thing people wanted, which was content. If you could bang those two together and every phone you bought came with free movies,
yeah.
Every computer you bought would have Blockbuster baked in.
You weren't wrong.
Well, yeah.
But it's a little bit like the continuation
I mean,
of the convenience
concept.
That's
pretty radical in like what year is this? Like early 2000s?
Super radical, yeah. Most people's eyes rolled back when I told the vision.
That means you should do it.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But yeah, it was, you hit the nail on the head, Jeff, because it was, the way I looked at it, convenient access to media entertainment. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about renting DVDs.
Right.
It was getting people convenience and their access to what they wanted, which was media entertainment. So, yeah, that was the grand vision. I ended up, so here I am pitching both strategies. I was actually in a meeting selling the Radio Shack vision, and the investor that I was talking to picks up the phone. He called Carl Icahn, which was one of the Blockbuster investors. And he said, you need to hear this guy. He's got this idea for a Radio Shack, but you should do this for Blockbuster. And 20 minutes later, I was in Icahn's office. And,
of course.
Yeah. And wow. Yeah, it was pretty interesting. But here was the fatal flaw, sadly, because Carl's a financial guy. I'm the operating guy, the strategy guy. And Carl said, look, you don't need to take this private. Leave it a public company. I'm the financial guy. I know what I'm doing. I'll support you. Everything will be fine. And the challenge was neither of us had a crystal ball. But had we refinanced the company in 2007, we had $1 billion of debt. Had we refinanced that debt, because a big chunk of it was due in 2009, we would have then put a 5-year term on that debt, sailed right through the financial crisis, and never batted an eyelash.
Let's take a step back here. The myth that exists in the business world is if you don't change, you die. And Blockbuster didn't pay attention to technology. And they laughed at Netflix. And Netflix came and wiped them off the face of the earth. And all of that's fundamentally false.
Yes.
You're hitting the one side of it, which is the financing. And I don't know why it doesn't make for great headlines that Lehman Brothers and the financial collapse and Bear Stearns and recapitalizing debt and all that stuff is really what happened and the technology was really going on there. But that's hard to put into a headline and nobody wants to click and laugh about. Like, yeah, you don't be in Blockbuster.
Yeah.
You guys had great technology, right?
We did. We did. We actually, my very first act in arriving was to acquire a company called MovieLink that had been built by 5 of the 6 major studios. Because they didn't want to have happen what has happened. In other words, total loss of control, fragmented market. No one knows how to find the movie they want. The studios wanted to control that environment, but they didn't work well together because they were arch enemies. They were competitors.
Sure.
So they were not having a great time running this company. And they said, why don't we sell it to Blockbuster, our preferred customer, for this rental movie window, which is what really the two ways the studios made money are the theatrical release and then the rental window. So we were a preferred customer. They sold us this entity. We were very well positioned versus Netflix because we had new releases. Netflix had, if you recall, a lot of older movies.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So very well positioned. Sadly, we had in the first year doubled our earnings and we were had this streaming video company. We had something called Total Access. So we had stores, kiosks, by mail, and streaming.
Any way you want it.
Any way you want it, yeah. And then Lehman Brothers hit. In September of 2008, they collapsed. Moody's at the same time gave us a two-notch upgrade in our debt rating, which meant now we can finally refinance our debt.
Perfect timing.
Yes, except the bank shut down, right? And so no one was willing to do
new
refinancing.
Credit.
No new credit. And the rumor started that Blockbuster would be filing. So again, fear crept
in.
Drives
the market, yeah.
And that really, the what killed Blockbuster more than anything else wasn't even the financial market collapse. It was fear. The studios, each of the studios were afraid that if we filed, we had 90-day credit terms. So we had a fairly strong cash balance.
Yep.
As a financial guy, you can see how this came down, right?
Yep.
So one studio got nervous and took us from 90 days to cash terms. And then it became like a dominoes.
That's all it takes.
And that pulled $350 million of cash right out of our business in a week.
Fear and greed, and fear is stronger than greed.
No, that's exactly
correct.
It's so
correct.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. A loss of equal magnitude hurts twice as much as a gain feels good, right? Like to lose.
So Paul and I were thinking that.
You know, like to
say that again.
To lose $10,000 hurts twice as bad as it does to get $10,000 of a gain. Like feels good, but it hurt.
Emotional
the
weight.
The emotional hurt is twice as bad.
Yeah. So people will fight twice as hard to preserve against a loss,
correct?
Compared to try to gain that equal amount.
You got to experience a black swan. Straight up.
Yeah. It wasn't the most fun I've ever had, but it was a great learning experience. And I like to quote Nelson Mandela. He was actually willing to be honorary chairman of this foundation when I started it, called Education is Freedom. And he was too ill to travel to Radio City Music Hall, so he did the video, a video basically announcing that Education is Freedom is the solution for the world. Really. And he had a great expression, though, that I fall back on. He said, I never lose. I win or I learn.
Mm-hmm.
And the learnings in that Blockbuster case are so rich for any company because it's all about all the fundamentals of managing cash and communicating.
Right.
Yeah, there's like probably a million people that when they learn the story have this aha moment because they've written it off as this very simplistic way of saying that a company failed. That's not what happened. And it wouldn't have happened that way if it was technology. It would have been a much different bleed.
Oh, exactly.
So I hope everybody gets a chance to kind of go back and research that. And really, it's par for the course on all of your adversity creates your biggest strengths, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a cornucopia of lessons.
It is. It's, I told you. Whack it.
Sorry.
There's the nuts again.
Whack it.
Yeah, whack it. I'm afraid the stick's going to come out any second here.
Oh, it's going to be... A whole bunch of stuff's going to fall out and one black swan, and you're supposed to shoot it when it's coming down.
It's like Duck Hunt.
Black swan.
I'm in.
Sounds pretty cool. It's video meets reality.
So you want to hear the blessing?
Please.
Yes.
Always.
Please.
Always.
I got
you never stop smiling, so I know it's coming. Yeah.
I'm telling you, I swear the Holy Spirit has followed me around since I was a little kid, and this has kept happening. The circumstances 7-Eleven ended up being silver lining in the cloud. Wow, 7-Eleven came out stronger, better. I came out with a promotion out of that catastrophic circumstance. Blockbuster, terrible situation, ended up being better. The secret weapon that I've been talking about that's in the book is how do you manage through crisis, right? And the secret weapon that I discovered, and I'll share with you how I discovered it, has now 35 million views on Instagram.
Oh, yeah, you went super viral or something.
I went super viral with a message, but the backstory to the message, I don't tell people the backstory.
I don't know any of this. This is like a whole
news
new layer.
Oh, yeah, this is all news to me.
I will share this with my Beata dudes.
Yes!
Shortly after becoming CEO of 7-Eleven, I was suffering from that imposter syndrome stuff that we always go through. Oh my gosh, can I do this? You know, am I the right guy? I have big responsibility now. It's a global company. I have 400,000 employees. All that stuff going through my head. And one night I have a dream. And in this dream, I thought I had died because I had that out of body experience that people describe. Very consistent when people die, right? Bright light, the incredible feeling of warmth and love, right? I had that. And I didn't want to wake up because it was so powerful. And I thought for a second, did I die? You know, no, I think I'm still here, I think, but I'm sleeping. So this must be a dream, but I don't want to wake up. And in this dream, I was told that I had a gift, but I had to do three things to get this gift. And I went down this path trying to satisfy the needs to get these three things. And the first, I came back and I said, I know I'm going to have to change somehow to be worthy of this gift. I will change. You trust me. I can deal with change. Bring it. And I got this warm embrace, like, wow, you passed the first test. The second was, again, I thought I was going to fail, but I came back and said, I just can't figure out what I'm supposed to do, but I know I can do it. Just give me the chance. I can do this. And the second way I passed the test was confidence. And the third, now I was challenged. I was given a task, a real task. Here, take these two sticks and make something that will change the world. And now I'm like a scientist, right? I'm like trying to lay it out, and I'm trying to figure out, do I cut them? Do I splice them? Do I tie it? Do I bend them? What do I do with these two sticks? And I came back with a simple solution. I put the two sticks in the side of a cross. Mm-hmm. And I said, and again, the warm embrace, congratulations, you passed the test. The test was clarity, simplicity. And then I wake up. I was going, oh, no, 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 I didn't get my gift. I wake up, I write down those three things as quickly as I can on a piece of paper. I shake my wife, wake her up. She says, what? I had this great dream. I have to tell you, you're not going to believe this dream. Here's what happened. And I grabbed the piece of paper. I said, I wrote down these three words. I have no idea what it means. And I'm so upset because I didn't get my gift. And she said, dummy. As your only your wife.
Yeah, yeah, as all good wives.
Term of endearment.
Yeah. Yep. That is your gift. Mm. You have an uncanny ability to embrace change, bad or good. You can find a silver lining in it and keep your head up. Secondly, you have a weird sense of confidence. You think you can do anything. And if you don't know how to do it, you'll go figure it out. You'll learn it. And the third thing is, you've got an ability to take really complex problems. I don't know how you do it, she said, but you can take really complex, difficult things and break them down so even a sixth grader can understand it, which happens to be an Einstein quote. If you can't explain it to a sixth grader, you don't understand it yourself. And he talks about simplicity and clarity. And so, yeah, she said, that is your gift. You have those three things. So I get on this YouTube video, and a kid says, young man says, interviewing me, what's the secret to success? And I said, I'll share with you. Change, confidence, and clarity. Those three things will help you overcome fear and take you through any crisis, whether it's personal or professional. And you too can succeed with those three things. That video, that message now has been seen by 35 million, mostly young people.
Good.
To be able to help them deal with the same kinds of challenges in their life. Isn't that cool?
Wow. Everything about it's cool.
Is it cool? What part isn't?
Yeah.
It's the fourth C. It is cool.
Super cool.
Okay, you want goosebumps?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what day it was? Christmas morning.
How did you and this guy do a podcast on Christmas morning?
No.
The dream.
That's the gift.
Yeah, the gift. It was a Christmas gift. It was Christmas morning. Yeah.
Probably the influence
of Midnight Mass,
sure,
right? You know,
sure.
You go to Midnight Mass, you're all feeling all holy and everything. But no,
sorry,
it's
incredible. Incredible.
Isn't that cool? But, it's
beautiful.
I swear, it's the power of the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. That doesn't just happen. It is the confluence of events and circumstances that make it possible to share such a powerful message.
And you have continued to go down this path on your using your skills and your resources in a faith-based approach. I mean, just for the church, with the church. I know there's a connection with you and something regarding the Vatican museums. I remember hearing that from our friend Daniel at the very beginning of knowing who you were. But can you give us any insight into what you got cooking these days with the local bishop and Rome and whatever else you got going on?
Well,
the cornucopia continues.
Yeah, it does. It does. It
this
does.
Is the sprinkles.
It's a complex. This is a complex
More
story.
Fruits.
Yeah.
These are from the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. Yes.
He's like a TCBY in here. Just put every topping in there.
Yeah, exactly. Some Jimmy's.
Jimmy's.
Anyway.
But you, if you didn't see that on YouTube, you need to go watch the delivery of that because that was pure gold. I loved that.
we are blessed in Dallas with, we talked about the University of Dallas. We have an amazing diocese here in Dallas with some amazing people.
It's like an alive diocese.
It's incredible. And it is now the largest denomination in Dallas. It's gone from several hundred Catholics when I moved to Dallas to now 1.5 million or something like that.
Yeah.
We blew right by the Methodists a while back. They don't know it yet. So, and we're all so humble, so we have to.
Yeah, exactly. Honking from the HOV.
Yeah, exactly.
Bye. Do we have bumper stickers yet? Yeah. Can we put that?
HOV must have 1.4 million people in your car to ride in this lane.
We have. Yeah. I grew up in a small Catholic town. People have a "We love our priest" bumper sticker. It's like, "We love our priest more than you love your pastor," something like that.
There you go. Nothing like a little good holy competition.
The holy occupancy vehicle.
There it is.
We're blowing by them, and then keep going.
So
we have the Beatitudes.
We are also blessed with Beatitudes.
Yeah.
That's the only snippet I'm taking.
Exactly. And seriously, a series of amazing bishops. I mean, Bishop Farrell was incredible when he was here. Bishop Burns came in. Has done some amazing things, and he's brought an incredible energy. As you know, you had him right here.
That's right.
He's the right guy at the right time to take us to that next level. But I'll share the story of this whole Vatican adventure. It started when Cardinal Farrell was here, and he was Bishop Farrell, and he was asking for some help with the cathedral downtown. And they were trying to raise money for plaster and paint, and I said, you know, it's hard to raise money for repairs. I said, can't we do something big? This is Dallas. Look at the Cowboys. Look what they did. And mm-hmm. Look at the Performing Arts Center right across from there. We had over 100 families give $1 million each that had never given to the arts because it was such an amazing facility. Yeah. It was like, it was the best. We want the best in Dallas. So can't we do something like that with the cathedral? Let's knock it out of the park. And he said, well, what? And I don't know, you know, I was just trying to be creative. So I said, well, it's right in the heart of the arts district. And I'd spent a lot of time. I had been chairman of the Dallas Symphony, and I helped with the Performing Arts Center, and we built One Arts Plaza for 7-Eleven's headquarters. So we did a lot of things right there. And I knew the power of that area. It's the only place in the country you have 117 contiguous acres of art. So I said, why don't we do something with art and the cathedral? And he said, okay, good idea. What? And I said, well, what if we cut a deal with the Vatican and we can do some exchange of art? Because I was privileged as a kid to be able to see the Vatican Art Museum, and there's billions of dollars of this amazing art sitting in vaults that no one ever gets to see.
Yeah.
And there's millions of people that never get to go to Rome. Why not bring Rome here? And anyway, he said, that's good idea, kid. But can we raise the money for the paint and plaster first, and then we'll come back and do that later? Okay. Well, then a whole series of miracles occurred. And the first miracle was Bishop Farrell gets a call from Pope Francis one day and says, hey, I want you to come to Rome. Now all of a sudden he's in Rome. And I had the privilege of being there for his elevation to cardinal, and I was able to say, well, you're here now. Can we do it? Come on, let's go. Let's go.
No excuses,
yeah. So he then introduces me to Bishop Burns when Bishop Burns came, and everything happens for a reason. Bishop Burns and I had Pittsburgh in common. We were both a couple of Pittsburghers. He was a real one. I was just a temporary one, but we hit it off right away, and he just loved this mission that we would share art with sacred art with the people of the diocese and the whole country if we could pull this off. So he strongly endorsed the mission. Another miracle comes along. I get a call from this guy named Daniel Hennessy, who happened to be the head of the patron of the Vatican Arts, spending several years in Rome at the Vatican Art Museum. Where does he live? Dallas, Texas. And he said, hey, here you've got this project going. Can I help? Yes. Absolutely. Well, miracle after miracle after miracle kept happening. It still continues to happen. These things take a long time.
Oh, yeah.
But as technology has progressed, we've even taken it to the next level to believe that we can use, in similar fashion to these immersion experiences that you see around the country, why not take the Sistine Chapel and put it right here in Dallas, Texas via laser? But with technology today, you can even take it one step further. You could have a holographic Michelangelo sitting there pointing out each panel of the Sistine Chapel ceiling and describing what he intended with the Pope at the time to capture in that panel.
Wow.
Unlimited opportunity to inspire, to
educate.
Educate, exactly. To evangelize. Pope John Paul II put out a thing called Letter to the Artist, where he talked about sacred arts as part of the new evangelization. To be able to bring people into the church with beauty.
I mean, imagine that as an app on your Apple Vision Pro, right? Now it's everywhere.
Absolutely, right? And that's where we're heading. That's where we're heading. And it's an absolute blessing to be able to have the privilege of working on this really important project. And all it is just the vision of the future. And a lot of folks have a hard time wrapping their heads around what's possible. But with technology today, virtually anything is possible.
Well, I bet on Jim.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you're saying all of this. I was just speaking to a friend of mine earlier today, day of recording. We were talking about, it was Prophet Hosea saying, my people perish for lack of vision, and art is one of the most powerful ways to paint that vision for people, to be that window into the divine and draw people's mind into God.
It is. In fact, Bishop Burns has a wonderful way of putting it. I knew he owned this project as his own at one point, because we were meeting with someone from the Archdiocese of Sydney who was doing something similar, and we've been collaborating with them on this project. The Vatican asked us to work together on it, and he turned to the gentleman from Sydney and said, "Think of this as the modern version of stained glass." Because for centuries, stained glass was the way to inspire, to evangelize, to teach.
Yeah.
And this is the modern stained glass, the full immersion.
That's cool.
Of sacred art. Isn't that cool? Bishop Burns, when he said that, I knew. Now he's got it.
He gets it. Yeah, he gets it. He's on board. Yeah.
This is his mission now. So,
Jim, if somebody wants to get involved in that project, is there a way for them to find out more, or to reach out to you, or even to go and be a part of the Foundation for the Education is Freedom movement? I mean, how do people get engaged?
Oh my goodness! Well, lots of different ways. Let's separate these initiatives.
Right on. I mean, you got a couple things going
working on.
Here.
Yeah,
you can't separate a cornucopia, Jim. You just gotta whack it. Everybody knows that.
There's a little of everything in there. For the book, I welcome you to check out my website, jameswkeys.com. You can order the book through there. It's a direct link to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and others. I've also got, there's a little irreverence in some of the social media stuff I'm doing, but it's fun. I hope you'll see it as fun.
part of the cornucopia.
Yeah, exactly. At James Key, at J Keys Author is the Instagram and TikTok site.
He just made eye contact with his social media person, Claire, who's in studio with us.
I did.
Claire, I'm sorry it's so hot in here, and there's four grown men sitting as close as possible together, but he got the nod that what he said was correct.
Yeah.
I don't have one of those, so everything I ever say about us is mostly right.
That's right. And Keys is K-E-Y-E-S.
That's right. Yep. And for the project, we do need a little time. Eventually, you'll hear more about this. I'd like to come back to the show. In fact, when we once 100%. We formalize these plans going forward, because I think it's going to be a game changer. And I'm so proud of the diocese to be right in the middle of this really global adventure that we have to bring the arts to people, the sacred arts to people.
I love this.
Yeah.
I'm glad we waited to go deep here on air so that we could memorialize this and get to know you. You very likely have a spot back at this table. If you ever want to sponsor, you guarantee do. No, all kidding aside, we are so blessed. I mean, I think about the people who've come through here and sat at this table are people who have changed the world, who have brought beautiful art and music, people who are doing incredible work, you know, as clergy, as religious, sharing even the journeys and struggles that they've been through, but all kind of coming back to that joy and blessing of being rooted in Christ, and also understanding the simplicity of our dignity as humans, and then what we have more in common than we do that is separate. You happen to, outside of the religious, you know, holy orders, you probably fit every one of those things I just named. So it's I can't wait to tell our next guest you're coming after Jim Keys. Now, we'll just do a montage after this. Jim,
cornucopia.
I mean, I feel
you have
like
to do the special effect when we do that. When you air this, you have to have this.
Oh, yeah.
That might go viral because kids these days, they don't know about cornucopias. And if we can bring it back,
right?
You know, what was old is now new. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. My
marketing strategy. That could work.
Everything I said could work.
Yeah. I don't think they smashed the cornucopia.
No,
definitely not.
Jeff just, yeah.
Jeff's idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of melded a pinata and a cornucopia together somehow.
Guys.
Inappropriate, I think.
I bet I could get AI to make a painting of what I'm describing.
You could.
You could.
And it would be just as deformed as we're all thinking of it, right?
You bet. Like, you're not really sure the AI could do that?
I think it'd be frightening.
Yeah. So with that, my friends, Jim, any last thoughts, encouragement for the people out there that are looking for that joy and silver lining and blessing in their life?
I think I would just encourage everybody to find the opportunity in every crisis that they have, because fear really is the killer. It hurts us individually. It hurts us collectively. And with our faith, especially as Catholics, there's no reason for fear. There's really nothing to be afraid of.
All right, my friends. If you didn't watch this on YouTube, you're missing out. Jim never got that smile off of his face. It's really contagious to be around.
It is.
Yeah, so we will see all of you in the blessings, including the blessings and the hardships. And for the rest of you, we will
see you in the Eucharist.
God bless you. Whack it.
Thanks for tuning in. If you'd like to join us at our undersized table, subscribe to the video version of the show on YouTube by typing at, that's the symbol at, so shift and two on your keyboard, @_Beatitudes on YouTube. We'll see you there.